everyone. Welcome to the Sherman Connect Call. I am Dr. Kim Stutzel, a Sherman board member, and I'm excited to be hosting the call with Dr. Jessica Harden, a great chiropractic leader. I'm going to be muting the call right now so we can have the best quality sound for everybody. So we'll just do that right now. All right, now if you're near a computer or a mobile device, feel free to tweet or post that you're on this call so your colleagues can join us. You can post the call-in phone number or the link to sherman.edu/connect so they can find out. And I want to personally thank the others on the Board of Regents and our donors, our sponsors, and everybody who helps to make the Sherman staff, everybody who makes these calls possible. So, again, tonight I'm really pleased to be that we're speaking with Dr. Jessica Harden. And Dr. Harden is a solo female doc in Fort Mill, South Carolina. Shortly after she graduated, she founded Providence Chiropractic and has one of the largest Pierce Results Systems offices in the country currently. So Dr. Jessica serves as a mentor on the AMP team and travels to chiropractic campuses, inspiring students and other doctors. She's published studies on adolescent idiopathic scoliosis correction and autoimmune conditions and is passionate about subluxation-based research. In 2016, she founded FLYHT, a program for women chiropractors, which is an awesome program designed to provide resources and build community support. When she's not in the office or traveling on the road, she spends time fishing with her husband, Stuart, who is a professional kayak angler. Very interesting. So, Dr. Jessica, welcome to our call.
I'm glad to be on the call. Thank you for having me.
Mm-hmm. It's just terrific. So before we, you know, dive into this, why don't you, I would love to hear about people's background and what got them into chiropractic and what angled you into the great position that you're at right now.
Yeah, so unlike some people that enter chiropractic school, I actually did not have a chiropractic testimony or a chiropractic aha experience. It actually started well after I actually was in school already. And, you know, I honestly, it was a series of events. I actually was in full line to actually become a nurse and actually had everything lined up to have my entire education paid for and, you know, guaranteed employment. And all of a sudden, left turn, I got introduced to chiropractic, made that turn, went to school, and decided to never look back again. And that's, you know, one of the cool things that I've found about being through chiropractic school and becoming a chiropractor, I find that as the months, years go by, that I just fall more in love with chiropractic. And I think that's the beautiful nature of our profession is there is so much depth to it that you can find and appreciate about it. I'll touch base a little bit on the call tonight too, especially with that. But, you know, speaking like when I got out of school, I, you know, was always a person that just threw myself into everything. And I'm a person that, you know, if I'm going to do anything, I'm going to do it to the best of my ability. So I've been connected, as you mentioned, with AMP and had an opportunity to speak with a great deal of many students. And it's really fascinating. I feel like being as connected with students and young doctors across the nation has really continued to fuel my fire and my passion for what I do in practice because, you know, it's amazing work that we all who are listening on this call, you know, get to impact our communities, being able to impact other doctors and basically indirectly influencing who they're impacting, I think is one of the greatest gifts to be a part of. So I definitely appreciate that aspect of being a part of the chiropractic profession.
I agree. It's so important that we feed our young students as they're coming along and help them to grow and flourish because that just benefits the profession. And like you said, ripple effects are huge. So so appreciative that that you've seen that and put your energy that way. So I'm excited about your topic tonight, and that's how to, your goals and how a vitally important tool can become self-destructive, which kind of sounds, you know, like an oxymoron.
Like an oxymoron.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So why don't we dive right into that?
Yeah, and I think it's an interesting topic. I've been doing a lot of reading about goal setting and mindset and these other personal development tools that I've been looking into. And here's my little disclaimer. Everything that I'm going to share tonight is not my original content. The application towards a profession is, but really these are a collection of concepts from experts that I've read or listened to, and I can just attest firsthand that I've witnessed these kinds of things regarding goals. So, you know, and I think if we like start from the beginning, we all know, and this is a complete like, okay, everybody knows this. This is a common fact that goals are a vital element and skill we need to be successful. No one argues with that.
Right.
And in fact, when we're at a young age, we're always told that we need to make goals and value goals because that means we'll become successful, right? And we're taught that when you reach a goal, you're successful simply because you achieved it.
Mm-hmm.
The only problem is there's a slight problem with this logic, okay? And the issue in our experience with goal setting is we're rarely taught the true purpose of goals and what goals are actually for, okay? We just have this association that goals mean success and goals are what we're supposed to do, but we don't really have a firm grasp of what their true intent and purpose is. So I'm going to give a definition tonight, and I want everyone on this call to kind of adopt it during this discussion, and that is, goals are measurements to determine if you're going in the direction you want to go, okay? So that means goals do not equal success. Goals equal measurements, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think that's going to be important as we're moving forward here, because I think some of us on this call, and I know there's people out there, and myself was included in this category, that goals don't intentionally, like, directly equal success. They equal measurements. Now,
right.
Speaking of measurements, I think one of the most common thing that we measure in our profession is actually practice volume, right?
Right.
And it's probably a good one to reference here because if we look at our profession, it's almost like we have this dichotomy in our profession concerning this topic. You know, you have some people that speak, you know, very openly about high volume, and you have other groups that are kind of like resistance toward the high volume mentality, or maybe just apathetic to the idea of high volume. I'm not going to get into debate here because that's not important. But, you know, what's interesting about these two thoughts, I think both are right and both are wrong, but I truly believe it has nothing to do with the numbers here. And what's interesting, but what is a very obvious fact is that when you have these two opposing groups in a room, we know that people can be very passionate when discussing numbers, okay?
Especially
so when we're studying, yeah, exactly. And truth be told there. And, you know, when setting goals, I think there's two common mistakes that I've read about and I've witnessed firsthand that we make when we set goals. And one is making goals based purely on what you hear other people are doing without considering yourself, okay? So pure example, again, using kind of practice volume goals, hearing that people that are just recently graduating, what they're seeing or what your best friend is planning on seeing isn't exactly the best way to go about setting your goals unless you're taking yourself into account.
Right.
Have you put in the preparation ahead of time, or have you done even more preparation than someone else? You don't want to sell yourself short when setting these goals. The other aspect of the same mistake that we make is sometimes we end up comparing our progress with another doc's progress toward that similar goal, okay? And I know that there are several on this call that have heard the phrase, comparison is the robber of joy, okay? And when we set these goals, we should never be comparing ourselves to other people, but comparing our present self to our past or our future self, right? So we're always comparing it within ourselves. And there's this great phrase that one of my mentors uses, and he says, I'm not who I used to be, but I'm not yet who I'm going to be. And I thought it was so cool how he said that because, you know, it truly frees yourself up from this almost like this mindset of performance, okay? Now, I'm speaking firsthand on this. This is probably the toughest lesson for a competitive person to learn. I'm competitive by nature. I've been an athlete. I've been on multiple, like, teams and, especially being an entrepreneur. Like, I have no problem with being a competitive person. And sometimes I feel like this is the tougher lesson to learn about, you know, when you're comparing yourself and trying to make goals purely based on assessing yourself. So I'm speaking firsthand, but if you can master this sooner than later, you can kind of set yourself up for less heartache and less disappointment along the way too, and find more joy in that as you're going through your career. The second mistake, and this is what I think some people don't realize happens, and the mistake is the meaning that you attach to a goal, okay? Now, the second mistake, i.e. the meaning that we attach to a goal, impacts the first one as well. And this one, it can be kind of slight, and I think we need to pay attention to this because it can slowly basically sabotage us in our process to achieving a goal. Now, again, keep in mind, guys, I said goals are a measurement. They're not just a success, right? So we have to be careful of the meaning that we're assigning that measurement, okay? So let's talk about practice volume. I think some of the most common numbers we hear about, you know, we say, well, if I hit this magical number of, let's say, 250 a week, okay, then I will have achieved a successful practice. The other problem with that is some people say, well, when I achieve the successful practice, I'm going to add this, then I will be happy and I will feel fulfilled, okay? And so what ends up happening is that, let's say they're in the camp of that they reached that 250 goal. Well, this group will, if they've assigned the wrong meaning to the number, they'll hit the 250 mark, they'll pause, they'll take a look around, they'll look at their practice, they'll look at their finances, and they'll say, well, I sort of feel successful. I kind of feel happy. Well, maybe it's because it's not 250. Maybe it's because it's 400 or 500. So then they start chasing after the next number. And so you have to be careful about assigning what you mean by what meaning you assign that number and that goal, because you could find yourself chasing numbers to pursue happiness and fulfillment and joy. And what happens is when you reach those goals and those feelings aren't there, if you're not careful, you'll just think that, oh, it's because you've got to chase the next goal. And that can be a dangerous, slippery slope towards burnout. So that's the first scenario. The other is, you know, what happens to those folks if you don't hit the 250 goal and you're falling into this mistake of assigning meaning to that goal? Well, you're going to fall into one of three categories. The first one, which is very common for most people, maybe not as much in this scenario, talking about practice volume, what can happen is you just simply make the statement of, well, it must not have been possible. Well, right now, if we're using the number 250, many of us have heard other practices saying 250, so we're probably not going to land here. But if we look at other types of goals that we set, some people could easily just say, well, it must not have been a possible number, so that's a goal that I could just throw out, okay? The second thing that can happen if you continually miss your goal is you might start to say, must be something about me or my situation that actually prevents that goal, okay? So the second camp says, okay, there must be something about me or my situation that prevents this. So now we're looking at something called growth mindset. And there's this gal named Angela Duckworth. She's probably one of the leading researchers when discussing grit. And, you know, she landed on this concept of growth mindset that we can limit ourselves and our ability to grow because we state that a characteristic of ourself or our situation is limiting us on that process. And I think that can't be further from the truth. Another phrase that one of my mentors and coaches has stated, he says, it's not a resource problem, it's a resourcefulness problem. And there's a lot of truth to that. And so if you're continually missing your goal, you can default to this, well, it just might not meet, it's just probably meant to be because there's something about me and my situation. So again, another thing that can result. The last thing, and this one's probably the most dangerous and heartbreaking one, and that is you start to convince yourself that you really didn't want that goal anyway, or that it wasn't a goal that meant anything. And that is where it can probably be the hardest thing to watch, because you have these people that are striving, they're pushing, they're building towards this magic number that they had in mind, they're not reaching it, and then they have this slow process mindset shift of, well, you know, maybe it just wasn't meant for me, and then eventually into, well, I didn't want that anyway. I must have been mistaken. I must have wanted something else. And that's horrible because, you know, when you set goals, there's a reason you're setting them. And you're setting them because you want them for a reason. And not because you're just, as long as you didn't randomly pick them because you were, again, comparing yourself to others or other situation. Right. But I think that's something you have to be very careful about. And so, again, you know, what are goals for and what they're not? You have to understand that they're measurements, and you have to be very careful about the meaning that you're assigning to those measurements, that they're a measurement for progress so that you know if you're getting better. But they don't define if you're a better person. And I think that's what happens sometimes is when we're setting goals is sometimes our identity gets wrapped up in it and we have to be careful. Now, granted, we're talking a lot about practice volume numbers. I just speak of it because it's the most common goal measurement that we hear about right now, but this can apply to anything. I mean, it could apply to, if you're a student on the call, it could apply to your grades. You know, what does it mean if you get straight A's? Well, they're just measurements. It just means that you accomplished, you know, doing well in courses. But does that define who you are as a person? No. Who you are as a person is your work ethic that went into getting those A's, which brings me to another thing. Goals are good. They're needed. But what we need to be assigning meaning to is actually the process or the journey towards the goal. If you're on this call, I guarantee you probably have heard this phrase, falling in love with the process. Now, when people hear this for the first time, they might take a step back and they say, oh man, I don't know if I could appreciate the grit and the grind and the, you know, monotonous detail that goes into practicing something or rehearsing something to be able to get better at it. And that's true. I mean, no one's going to fall in love with grunt work, so to speak. But what delineates the difference between appreciating the process and just doing, you know, pushing through and ignoring like the grunt work is the appreciation you have for steady daily attention to detail and precision. So, you know, in chiropractic, we have, you know, three distinctions. We have the art, the philosophy, and the science. And all of us, we all became interested in chiropractic for one reason or another. And in order to, and we all find one of those branches to be interesting, if not a combination of all three. And here's what it comes down to. You won't fall in love with the process unless you're passionate about the skills that are needed to create your love or your development within those fields, okay, whatever those branches are, or just under chiropractic umbrella, okay? So there's a reason you're interested and passionate about being a chiropractor. Falling into, okay, well, what is that? Why is the reason? And what specifically are you passionate about within chiropractic, philosophy, science, or art? And then looking at the skills that are required from that, and that's where you kind of draw your passion for falling in love with that process. Someone that talked a lot about it was I'm referencing Angela Duckworth again because it's probably one of the most recent books I've read, and she talks a lot about grit being passion and perseverance coming together to foster a long-term goal. And she actually speaks about passion, and she has this statement in there. She says, I believe it's a mistake to tell the youth of our next generation to follow your passion. She says, we should be telling people to foster your passion. Mm. And see, what's interesting, right. See, when I first read that, it really spoke to me because, you know, how often are we chasing things that interest us? We're like, oh, that's cool. Maybe I'll do that for a while. And then we fall into something else and we're like, oh, you know, that's cool too. I kind of want to do a little of that too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Right. And so the thing is, we shouldn't be chasing. We should be fostering what our interests are. Mm-hmm. And here's another good sentence that came from that same chapter. She said, passion is fostered by a little bit of discovery, requiring lots of development with a lifetime of deepening. I'm going to repeat that again. Passion is fostered by a little bit of discovery, requiring lots of development with a lifetime of deepening. Okay? Mm-hmm. So when we're talking about a little bit of discovery, I want you guys to think back like to when you decided you wanted to be a chiropractor. Something sparked that moment, right? Maybe it was, maybe your health, you know, was doing amazing and that your testimony was what did it. Or maybe you thought it was really cool how your hands could literally transform a person's life. Or maybe you thought it was really cool how the nervous system controlled everything and how a singular profession could affect all different aspects of health in just a single type of vehicle. And so, or, you know, just take your pick. But that little bit of discovery, that ignition, is the beginning of where you could find your passion. So reminding yourself of those little moments of discovery. Now, here's what's interesting, too. Innately, we are all designed and drawn towards novel things that are different, okay? This is why we sometimes kind of become, you know, like a squirrel and we jump from thing to thing and we don't really take the time to really explore that. So I think it's important that, you know, when you're looking into developing your fostering your passion, is making sure that you're keeping it fresh, that you're constantly, you know, creating this little bit of discovery process. Now, those of you that are in practice, you probably have every week or so, you probably have someone come in and they're like, man, doc, I got over insert whatever condition. And you're like, wow, I didn't know that could happen. And granted, that can get a little bit harder the longer you're in practice because you see so many different things. But in the beginning, it's like every time someone overcomes some symptom or whatever, you're like, wow, that's pretty cool. I never would have thought, you know, the body would be capable of such things. And it's just that little bit of discovery process. Now, with the development part, what's interesting is interests are actually not what they say. Interests are fragile, and so we need multiple ways to engage it. Hmm. So what's fascinating is in order to keep our interest up there is we got to find multiple ways to engage it. So maybe it's practice testimonials. Maybe it's conversations with our colleagues. Maybe it's listening to podcasts. But we need a variety in order to keep engaging those things. And the word interest translates as interesse, which means different. And that is where we are innately driven towards the novelty. And there's a guy called Paul Sylvia, and he was actually doing some research on, I think he was looking at dancers, but he was actually studying the differences between how novices dig into this deepening, this development stage versus beginners. And the thing is, when it comes to the keeping things interesting, the beginner, it's the interest lies with anything that has not been experienced before. But with the expert, the novelty of the practice lies with the nuances of that interest. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's apply it to chiropractic. All right, so here you are a student, okay, and you are excited about everything, right? It's like every time you feel a spinous, you're like, oh my gosh, I feel a bone. And then, you know, you feel a little muscle spasm, you're like, oh my gosh, I feel the muscle spasm. You feel all these like differences, and then you work with different spines and different people, and, you know, you just keep growing. But then you get into practice, you know, now you've worked with multiple types of spines and you've seen multiple things in your office. So maybe it's the slight vector that changes that makes that person hold their adjustment longer, or that a little extra detail in how you set that person up for a film that gives you an even clearer picture of what you need to see. So that is that part where we're starting to get into the development and the deepening part. And that, I believe, is if we can harness those kinds of things, we'll continue to foster our passion and continue to dive into the process and focus on the process and the journey. And that ultimately will lead to what we will find from fulfillment in our profession, joy in our work, and also feeling like we have that sense of purpose too.
Wow. So in taking all this, because that's a lot of information with you know, that we've gone through with the goals, taking baby steps as people go along, like where do they start in this process, or if they're in that process, to support it? I mean, you know, some people are goal setters and boom, and they're always working on that. Some people, like you said, have stepped away or shy away or don't set those. So for either of those people, where should they begin?
Yeah, so I think the first thing is ask yourself what interests you, the very bare basics, because if you can't find what interests you, then there's no way you're going to begin the process of fostering and developing that into a passion, right? So if you're like, you know, hey, you know, I want to, you know, have a stronger practice, or I want to be able to see more people. Well, ask yourself what interests you about the profession, what interests you about taking care of people, and then working backwards. And maybe what interests you taking care of people is the fact that you get to see, you know, people heal naturally. Well, maybe research might be, you know, reading research or other testimonials or case studies or something might be of interest. Or maybe, you know, when you're looking at goals, you're like, hey, I want to see this goal, but, you know, I don't, you know, it seems too daunting to try to get there. Now, speaking to that latter situation, meaning like you set a goal and you're like, man, you know, it's there, but I haven't like gotten there in a while, or I've kind of like shied away from it. There's a book named Pounding the Stone by Joshua Medcalf, and there is a chapter in there that literally says, stop looking at the numbers. And it literally, in this chapter, this mentor tells the main character in the story, he says, well, stop looking at the numbers. Just focus on just the delivery and what you do day in and day out, and focus on that delivery getting better and better each day. They even talk about, I forgot the name of the principle, but it's talking about getting 1% better every single day in whatever aspect that you're trying to work on. Right. And so, you know, maybe you're frustrated by a number, whatever that looks like. I would just push that number aside and just start digging into steps and processes and just finding joy in that you're accomplishing and building your skill set. And then when you look up one day, you're probably going to find the numbers are starting to increase or get closer to that goal when you occasionally look up.
Right, right, because you're, like you said, into what interests you and into creating the change, little projects, instead of just number or a bigger thing, you have something tangible, smaller and tangible to work toward.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. So, you know, in working with goals, I mean, I know you work with a lot of women chiropractors and you work with students and you work with other doctors and stuff. You know, what is your process with setting people up and coaching them along to help them in their goals?
Yeah, so when setting goals, we all know that we have, you know, our big goals, and then we break them down into smaller action steps too as well. And one of the things that I think I talk about, that I see spoken about a lot on the flight stage, is that we've had multiple conversations about feeling fulfilled. And I think sometimes what happens in that process to achievement, women especially are kind of guilty of this. They want to be, seen as they have it all together in all aspects of life, right? They have it together as a mom, they have it together at home, they have it together in practice, and they're trying to be these like superstars in all these different realms. Right. And the thing is, sometimes it's just not fulfilling. And so, you know, when looking at goals and looking at, you know, what you want to measure, you need to kind of take a step back and say, you know, what truly interests you? What are you truly passionate about? And, you know, what do you feel like your life purpose is? Because you have to have your goals meet your life purpose. And if that goal doesn't match up with it, you're going to find you're measuring yourself towards something that's not the direction you want to go. So everything you filter through should be filtered through that idea or that vision you have of your purpose and what you feel that you need to become. And so, and we basically need to get rid of the idea, you know, of, oh, I need to be the best in everything. And I think that we need a focus point, and we need to build harmony in all the different aspects of life. But I believe we need a focus point and a main mission to focus on and center around.
Right, right. And our values and I find different life stages that we're at too.
Absolutely. That's the thing. Yeah, and speaking on harmony too, you know, about 3 years ago, I heard the difference between what was called balance and harmony. And when we talk about balance and harmony, harmony implies that there's an appropriate proportion applied to any given, you know, section, and they all work together as a unit. Where balance means you're applying equal distribution in all different aspects. And if you are a person that's wearing multiple hats, you're a parent, you're a business owner, you're a spouse, you know, enter whatever other hats you want in that equation, you're, you know, involved in government, whatever, you know, you're not going to apply the same amount of attention to all different aspects. That's absurd. You're going to shift and move these, priorities are different, assessments of these different categories based on, as you said, the season you're in. You know, maybe your kids are littler and they need more attention. Maybe, you know, your practice is just starting and that needs the more attention. And I think it waxes and wanes, and to honor that and be okay with it is a whole nother level of joy and satisfaction.
Right, right, right. I've seen that so much in myself and in other people, and, you know, in my years through the profession. I want to take a quick break right now and talk about Sherman Lyceum. So if that's okay, we're going to, you know, let everybody know that if you haven't already registered, you can go to Sherman's website, sherman.edu, and look up Lyceum, and definitely get registered for our Lyceum this year. It's going to be May 3rd to 5th, and it's this year it's going to be in downtown Marriott in Spartanburg because of all the incredible construction that's going on at the school. We can't have it at the school, but it's going to be at the Marriott, and there's going to be up to 23 hours of CE that have been applied for. We've got incredible plenary speakers, CE sessions from technique and philosophy and research, just incredible people with that. Philosophy and practice management sessions, including our own Jessica Harden that we have, is going to have a flight leadership conference or a panel with different women chiropractors. And after we get back, Jessica, if it's okay, I'd love you to talk a little bit about flight and what it is. So there's so many different things for pretty much anybody in chiropractic, but it's always a great time. There's going to be a great banquet on Saturday night and the High Heels and High Hats Gala. So definitely come down and join us. There's, of all the different things I've been to in chiropractic, there's a spirit at Lyceum that you really don't get anywhere else. And so we really look forward to you being there with us. You can contact Jillian Kirsch if you need more information. She's the director of CE at Sherman College. And, again, go to sherman.edu/lyceum to register. So now back to our discussion. So, Jessica, I don't know if you have – like you want a whole other topic on your goals, and we want to go there. But sometime before we finish tonight, I'd love you to talk about how you got involved with flight and what it, and let people know what it is, because you and I have been talking about that and we haven't really defined it.
Yeah. Flight stands for Female Leaders Inspiring Greatness, Harmony, and Tenacity, and what kind of drove in flight into existence is, you know, being a mentor for AMPT and traveling different schools and speaking to different students, I found that everybody was kept asking the same questions. And the biggest questions that were always asked were, I don't know if, I'm wondering if I can do it. How do you do it with family and balancing that in practice? And how do you build the confidence to be able to get into a realm like that, having your own practice or being a part or being a leader in practice? And so from that actually came into those three words, greatness, harmony, and tenacity. And I was really passionate when those three words kind of came through those letters, because I think when we I think innately, like, you know, we're women's drum boys, we want to be the greatest version of ourselves. It just comes naturally. And, you know, and guys too, but when, you know, speaking with women specifically, it's like we want to be known as like that we can do anything we want to put our mind to, that we're not held to one stereotype or one ideal or what have you, that, you know, we can create whatever we want for ourselves.
Right.
And, you know, and speaking of harmony, it's, you know, without a brainer, like it's the most common question that we're asked. And, you know, with tenacity, we all know that it takes determination and diligence and persistence to achieve it. So, you know, when flight came about, the vision I had for it, it actually was going to start as, and I kid you not, it was going to be like a small get together of me and like 10 town gals. And that quickly grew into our first event, which had about 60 gals across three campuses that came together. And I just felt very strongly about this. When flight came to existence, it wasn't going to be like my opinion and how I think things should run. I knew it was a type of community. And community has been a big word for me personally, because, you know, being a part of AMPT and now getting to know the women in LCW, I cannot stress enough how important it is in our profession to have a sense of community, and we need to be able to brainstorm and bounce ideas off each other. And in flight, my goal was to bring women in multiple different aspects of their life, some with kids, some single, some married, some that are in business with another female, and bring those different elements together and kind of just showcase all the different seasons that a gal could be in, and also different types of, variations of practice.
Right.
And what is fascinating that came out of it was that I cannot believe the number of, and most of them were students, I couldn't believe the number of students that made the statement, after seeing that, I know that I can now open my practice. And why I found that so fascinating was what it means when they're making that statement. It means because they were visually able to see multiple examples, they finally could visualize it for themselves. That's literally what that statement meant.
Right.
And
right.
I think that things are changing now, and there's a lot of push and striving to, towards opening the door for more female speakers and multiple different avenues. And I think that's been amazing to kind of see that start to develop too as well. But it still exists, the fact that if it's not visually in front of you, then you don't know that it's a possibility or that it can exist. And I think that we are all striving very hard in multiple different ways to put that more in the forefront, especially of the gals who are in school right now. And it is definitely becoming more evident. And I know that, flight's playing a role in that moving forward too as well. And that's the whole premises behind it, is just to, the possibility, and it's possible because it's real and it's happening right now. And also as well, just to kind of allow different variations, that it's not a one answer situation, that there is, it varies, and it varies on each different person, and that is okay. And one person does not have to have all the answers, which
right.
is also a great feeling.
Right.
And takes a lot of stress off of it. So, in this most recent conference that we did, what ended up transpiring that I hadn't anticipated was, by the end of the conference, the types of conversations had were so deep and so real by the end, you just knew that what was going on is, we need that sense of connection. We need that sense of support. And the fact that as the day unfolded during the conference, that by the end, everybody was just so authentic and very transparent about where they were at and where they wanted to go and where their heart was, that you just knew that without a shadow of a doubt that this is the core element of what we needed to be able to be successful, and reminded of that, that these are normal emotions, that these are normal passions, that, there's nothing strange about having it, and there's nothing wrong with wanting to go after it and kick some out there. And I think that's one of my biggest joys that have come out of flight so far is getting to witness that firsthand and be a part of that.
Right. Well, it's so awesome to have this and to have created that, because I know, when I got out of school, we didn't have a lot of female role models, and started to see more and more as I progressed in the profession. But now, and we wanted to get women together and attempted to in a number of different ways. But in the last years, I want to say since LCW started and a number of other different groups that people have come together, and the conversation is just getting exponential, that more and more different groups are reaching out and talking to each other. And it's so important because, as you said, there's so many ways to practice chiropractic successfully, as long as you're serving your people and you're feeling fulfilled, and to have those conversations about how you can do that and be the best version of you, and have that be okay and safe is I think great for men and women in the profession. I mean, it really should be a profession-wide conversation, but if we women have to start it, then that's just the way it goes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So we want to go back to goals. Where do we want to take our conversation at this point?
I think, honestly, the biggest takeaway from our conversation is that acknowledging the fact that, goals are important, and making sure that you never take them past the fact that they're measurements. And they're measurements to ensure that you stay on the path that you want to go, and that goals must be filtered through you as the individual, that they're coming from you and the place that you want to head, and that they're not someone else's goals that you're adopting because you think that's the right kind of goal to set for yourself. And I also think that in setting goals, that you remembered that they're a comparison of yourself, that they're not there to match and kind of see where you're falling in line with other people. Now, can it be fun? Yeah, but knowing that that is their true intent and what they're meant for. And then also starting to learn how to fall in love with the process of becoming an amazing chiropractor and an amazing servant to our profession. And maybe just not from the aspect of that you're delivering adjustments, but maybe you're serving in other capacities through research or government or associations or through colleges, you know, whatever leads you down that path. But I think falling in love with that process is the true way to keep engaged and stay passionate about what it is that we can truly accomplish. And, you know, honestly, truth be told, we're really lucky to be in the profession that we are because, you know, chiropractic kind of lends way to being an exciting venture. I think that's what makes it such a big attractant for so many people because it's, there is so much awe to it and there is so much like, you know, amazing things that you can see coming from it, and
right.
and that's a blessing that we don't have to dig as hard as maybe we would for some other professions, and I think we need to kind of honor that and feel blessed to be able to have something that comes so naturally with that. But you know, last takeaway in falling in love with the process is, you know, understanding that you need to be passionate about the skills that are needed in order to create the greatness that you want in practice, in your personal life, or in the realms of within the philosophy, science, or art. And if you can target that and be passionate about the skills because of what it's going to create your growth within those segments or as a chiropractor, I think you're going to foster that passion again and really be able to, you know, appreciate, love your practice, be excited about being a chiropractor again, and ultimately, you know, taking a longer-term career full of enjoy, like self-fulfillment.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's so awesome. So for people who are going through their goal-setting process, you know, do you have, and we keep using the same word, process, do you have a process that you would suggest people do? You know, I've heard of somebody recently I was listening to a webinar and they were talking about just, you know, going in and getting away for a weekend, or do you have something in place to help people to begin to set their goals or to look at where they want to set their goals?
Yeah, so probably inspiration is a good one, and I think we can get a lot of that from community too as well. I mean, I know I said that you're not going to be comparing to your friends too as well, but I think, you know, when you kind of have people you trust that you can talk with about, you know, your ambitions, and those people can kind of open your eyes to directions or goals that you could have. Having solid mentors in your life can help you with that. I'm a personal believer, and I've mentioned this on other groups, Facebook groups alike too. You know, there's a verse in the Bible that says, seek wisdom no matter what the cost. And I'm a firm believer in that, and mentorship and having that. So, and fostering that process and goal setting, I think you need a strong mentor to help and guide you too as well. I think too as well, if a goal interests you, there's a reason. And so exploring what that reason is I think is important. So, you know, you sit there and you list out random goals that you think would have, you ask yourself the question, why? Why is it that you have that goal? What is it? Because it's not the goal itself that means something. It's the reasoning of why you wanted to make that a goal.
Right.
You know, for instance, why does someone want to go run marathons? I mean, honestly, I did it once. It's not my cup of tea. I probably won't ever do it again. But, you know, it's, you know, why would someone be fascinated with running miles and miles and miles? I mean, there's a reason why. Why would they want to set a course so long? I mean, there's a reason behind it. So I think when you're looking at goal setting, you really just want to ask yourself the question of, you know, why that goal? You know, why did it come to your mind? Because there's a reason for it. And maybe the reason is you're supposed to find the reason. I mean, that's a possibility. You know, that it could be, you know, innately drawn to it, or inspired, you know, through, you know, prayer or meditation, and maybe you're supposed to pursue the reasoning for that goal and see if there is something to it. You know, just a side thought there. But I think that's important to explore, you know, when it comes to setting goals, looking at the why.
Right, right. Then you really get in depth, which helps you to anchor to move forward to it, move forward through the tougher times of it, or, you know, through when you start to get distracted, you've anchored that why in mm-hmm. moving yourself forward.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And that's why I echo mentorship too, as well, is because, you know, if you have a goal, you know, a mentor who perhaps has already been down that path and achieved that goal, they can show you the action steps they took to go through that, and sometimes even make the process a little bit faster for you in multiple ways. You know,
right.
You can't rush. You can't necessarily rush like the process, but there are faster ways to get to your goals with the right preparation, with the right guidance too, as well. And
yeah, sure,
you always want.
You're not always reinventing the wheel.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Right. 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 But it's important for people to know the right people, you know, who the right people are to either mentor or trust them, so that they have somebody who encourages and lifts them up and not crushes them down.
Absolutely. You know. That's the thing is, yeah, that's the thing about selecting good mentorship and selecting, you know, good people to, you know, push forward with is, you know, you don't want to be dragging people along just for the sake of so you could go, you know, go along. You want to make sure they're building you up as much as you're building them up.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. So that everybody gets is really it should be mutually beneficial, that kind
mm-hmm.
of a relationship.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Right. Right. So more that you want to share on goals?
I mean, besides just making sure that the right meeting's assigned and that you're not, you know, having the goal define you as a person, and that you understand that as long as you take a step back and you ask yourself the why, I think that's probably the essence of it. And I think I honestly truly feel that's a lesson that we're not taught early enough. And sometimes it takes us, sometimes we don't learn it until we're already trying to open a business and trying to,
right.
from personal experience here, opening a business and trying to prove ourselves, so to speak, once we get into practice.
Once it's gotten to that point. So then, Jessica, I mean, you have done and are doing so much at this point. Would you share some of what your goals are in moving forward?
Yeah,
what do you see
so,
for yourself in the profession?
I have, you know, I kind of look at what's transpired over the last, it'll be 6 years this April, or this March, actually, which is really mind-blowing. Yes.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
Oh, yes. So, yes.
Rocket
for those
ship.
Of you on the call. Oh, man, it's really mind-blowing to think how much has changed in just that short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, my biggest goal is to personal development. I want to always be able to look at what I've accomplished and feel fulfilled,
mm-hmm.
and knowing that I accomplished it because it was a betterment for mankind or womankind, and be able to say, look, you know, I did it to my best of my ability with all that I have, and I left it all out there. And that's kind of been my philosophy. And, you know, speaking of, you know, we briefly mentioned, you know, taking breaks and vacations and stuff like that. I just want to feel like I have good harmony in all aspects, and that
mm-hmm.
I'm not neglecting certain aspects of my life that I'm called to honor, you know, whether it's
right.
My husband, my family, my, you know, my practice, that I'm being a good steward of those different aspects too as well. So those are always goals. Like,
mm-hmm.
are those things healthy? Are those things thriving? And, you know, personal goals is, And another, you know, goal I always have is I just want to be able to continue to get back to our profession, because if I don't, who will? I have that mentality, and
right.
I feel that it's everyone's responsibility to try to be as successful as they can in practice, so that they can in turn feed back into our profession to continue
mm-hmm.
it forward and continue to make it stronger. So, and I firmly believe that. So continuing to create a successful office so that I can continue to leverage myself to get back to the profession.
Well, that's awesome. That is really awesome. And we're so excited for the time that you took to be here with us tonight, and for all the things that, you know, you've done. I'll look forward to your flight, you know, the flight section at Lyceum when everybody's down at Lyceum, May 3rd to 5th. And any final thoughts as we go on tonight?
Yeah, I'm really excited to join Sherman at Lyceum. I know Sherman does a lot, has done a tremendous amount of work supporting everything from CE credits to research to the event every year, and it's really a big honor to be a part of it. And I know there's some amazing things that are happening at Sherman's campus to empower their student body and to further equip the next generation of chiropractors. So I'm looking forward to personally being down there to kind of take that in firsthand.
Right, right. Well, thank you. And, you know, it's so exciting to hear a young doc who is so so on fire and making such a huge difference in the profession. I have a son that just graduated from Sherman and a daughter who's going to graduate in a year. And it's and being on the board and being down around the students, like you said at the beginning of the call, it's just so exciting to see their passion. And it's so important for us to empower that so that passion doesn't flicker and die or get subdued when they get out into the realities of the, you know, of the world and practice and things and facing challenges. So you know, your goals and attitudes of being and supporting each other as we move forward so that all these passionate people who put their time and energy into learning to become chiropractors can take that and make it blossom instead of get caught in a struggle. It's just huge, and I applaud you for that. And I encourage everybody listening on the phone to, you know, to pick up some of that spirit and reach out to another DC, either for help if that's where you need, or reach out to another DC to help them, or just to get into community, as we were talking about before, that the sense of community and camaraderie in chiropractic is the thing that really helps us to stay the course. At least I've seen that in my experience.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
Mm-hmm. So Jessica, thank you very much, and we'll look forward to seeing you at Lyceum. For everybody on the call, please share with your friends about Sherman Connect. I think next week we have Jen Steinberg on the call. That's going to be another great call. We're on every week, and very soon the recording for this will be on, so you can listen again and share with your friends. And thank you very much on behalf of the Sherman Board and the administration and staff at Sherman, Jessica. Thank you, and everybody who's been listening, to our supporters. We appreciate those who send students, and we appreciate those who make donations to the college to help us to support us in our mission. And until next week, everybody have a fantastic week.